Like Mark Allen held the run course record until like 2 years ago. And he's a phenomenal athlete, but I don't know of any records that have held for that long.
Welcome to Mile High Endurance. Welcome to episode 198 of the Mile High Endurance Podcast. You are listening to your weekly connection to coaches, experts, and pro athletes to help you reach your endurance goals. We are your host, Coach Rich Source, 303 Chief Bill Plock. Thanks for joining us for another week of endurance interviews and discussion. Bill, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. I just thought of something. It's 198. Dang it. Because we could have done our 200th episode in Kona.
Oh, we will.
We kind of will, won't we?
We totally will.
Yeah, I guess we will.
Oh, yeah. Not by design, folks. Not by design. Just right. By sheer dumb luck.
I have fireworks or something.
I know.
It's hard to believe.
You know, we make a bigger deal out of the anniversaries than the century marks, which is kind of funny. And I've got another podcast friend who really, he and his co-host really celebrate their centuries. They just celebrated their first century show. Yeah. Anyway, Bill, I've got a question for you. I've got some questions for you. What do these numbers mean? 8, 22, and 21. And no, they're not lottery numbers.
8, 22, and 21.
Okay. Ooh, all right. I'm going to add one more number to the mix, the number 23. Now you've got 8, 22, 21, and 23. Stump still?
Yeah.
You're thinking it's like a combination.
All right.
One more number. The number 7. What do you think the number 7? So now we got 8, 22, 21, 23, and 7. Want me to take away the suspense?
Yeah.
Okay. 8, 22, 21, Sam Long's time at Ironman Chattanooga. 23, his age, and 7. He is the 7th pro to qualify for Kona 2020.
Good job.
You like that? A little fun, huh?
If someone gets that would have been good.
That's right, folks. We are talking to the 2019 Chatty Champ, Sam Long. This dude we predicted was just going to mature into an incredible talent at the iron distance. He has been doing huge volumes since a really young age. We've had him on the show a couple of times. He did Ironman Boulder at 18 and did it coming off of an injury, and qualified for Kona as an age grouper. Well, then fast forward, and you know, he won a marathon earlier this year. He won Ironman Chattanooga 70.3. Then he had this kind of cold spell, or kind of like a rough spot over the summer. We saw him at Ironman Boulder. We saw him at 70.3. Well, man, he just won Ironman Chattanooga by 9 minutes, which is awesome. And we're going to talk to him today. Also, just while we're on the topic, congrats to Angela Nath for winning the women's field by more than 4 minutes, which is totally cool. Thanks to last week's guest, Darren Ann Finn, author of Rise of the Ultra Runners, A Journey to the Edge of Human Endurance. The way I describe this, investigative journalism gone wild. This guy decided to do what was required to qualify for Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, and he was a runner anyway, so he decided to just go on this ultra running journey. Check it out. Great interview, episode 197. Bill, I've got a couple of announcements for our listeners. The first one is, next week is going to be like any we have ever attempted here on Mile High Endurance and kind of 303. We're kind of all taking it to the next level here. In this show today, we are going to be talking a little later on about our Kona coverage by 303, and what you should expect when you follow us at 303 Triathlon on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We will have content on 303 Radio as well. Bill and I will be publishing a daily, I think, right, Bill? We're going to try to do this daily?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, okay. He sounds more confident than I am. summary of what we've learned, inside scoops, what's happening, what the athletes are saying, what the industry experts are saying, what they're feeling, and just... more on that coming up. But We will also be including interviews with people in these summaries as we have them. So I really hope that you like that content. Please share our posts with your friends. Go to milehighendurancepodcast.com and click on the subscribe button, and you will get the newsletter every weekend with the show notes, all of the links, articles, etc. And of course, if you love the show, please consider making a donation on the PayPal donate button right there while you're at milehighendurancepodcast.com. A donation of any amount would help us defray costs of the show, and we appreciate that. Today's show is supported by iCore Labs. iCore is a clean, natural source of recovery-enhancing CBD that protects your body from the stresses of training, improves recovery from intense efforts, and helps you maintain a positive mental state. They have several products, from the daily shot to the recovery shot to the balm for sore muscles. Lots of products. Save 20% on any of them using the code ENDURANCE at checkout. Go to iCoreLabs.com for more details. Bill, here's what we have in the show today. We have got our feature interview with Sam Long. We've got what's new in the 303, and we're going to talk about our Kona kickoff, what we're going to be covering each day. We had talked at one point about doing like either some stupid stunt or some stupid competition each day. I want to revisit that that conversation with you.
Okay.
303 coverage, like I said, and the schedule. We're going to talk about all of that coming up. Plus, we have a couple of our Colorado athletes that have responded to a kind of profile questionnaire that we sent out, and we're going to tell you about a couple of them. So we're going to feature two of the many. How many Colorado athletes do we have?
52.
52. We're going to cover two of them. Sorry to the other 50 for right now. And then we've got a video of the week that relates very much to our featured guest, and then upcoming interviews, and that will be our show.
I'm tired, Rich. You just made me tired for the week ahead, and I haven't even gotten there yet.
Oh, man, I know. And if you can't tell, I have a little bit of of congestion.
Yes.
Sorry, folks. I have gone, it's been a year and a half since I've even had a sniffle. And Tuesday of this week, I wake up and I'm like, oh no. I have been on Zicam 24 hours a day. I've been on emergency. I'm sleeping as much. I'm trying to get to bed at 8, 9 o'clock.
Sleeping on the porch, just FYI. Man, I'm not catching this.
I'm sleeping on the porch.
Yeah. I am. I'll sleep on the, I'll let you be inside, but.
Actually, I'll sleep on the porch. It might be pleasant out there. Anyway, we'll figure that out. Hopefully, I'll be 100% by the time we get there. All right. Our interview is sponsored by Rip Laces. Rip Laces are an elastic lace system that integrates a bungee loop with a plastic core to connect each loop of your shoe with a custom tension fit. Bungees come in 5 different sizes to make sure that it is perfect for you. Cores and bungees come in a variety of colors and sizes, or you can just get the Mile High Endurance black on black logo package and get that 25% off using the code MHE25 at checkout. I've got to say, I keep hearing that more and more of the Mines team, the Colorado School of Mines team, is running in Rip Laces. So go Ore Diggers. All right. Interview introduction. Sam, so we're going to get into all this with Sam. But of course, like I said, back in early April, we had Sam on the show. We had taken note of that Napa Valley Marathon win with a time of 2:32:33. Now, straight marathon, 2:32:33, not a lot of people are running that pace. And this guy's an Uber biker. So for us to see that, we were like, man, we want to talk to this young man. Well, we did, and we're really glad we've made this connection with Sam. I think we've got a friend in Sam. Let's get into the interview with him and hear about his win at Chattanooga this last week. Here we go. All right, as you heard in our lead up, we have the Ironman Chatty Champ, fastest by 9 minutes. Sam, go long. Sam, how are you feeling, buddy?
I'm feeling great. You know, I'm just on cloud 9.
I'll bet you are. How's your body feeling?
Oh, every day is a little different. Even within the day is a little different. My glutes are really sore. Like every night I'm sleeping and like I have to find some type of position that like makes it so that I'm able to sort of stretch my glutes. But overall, actually feeling pretty good.
Yeah, can't wait to talk about that race. And Bill, I know you've got a lot of questions too. I'm going to lead off with this. I asked Bill this question earlier as we led up to this interview in the podcast. I gave him some numbers and I asked him what they represented. I'm going to ask you the same question. All right, ready?
Yep.
The numbers 8, 22, 21, 23, and 7. What do they represent? They are code for you, my friend. 8, 22, 21, time at Chatty.
Oh.
23 years old. Seventh male pro to qualify for Kona 2020.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
Awesome? Are you kidding me? Yeah. It's awesome. You're 23 years old. You're going to Kona as a pro.
Yeah, it's just pretty crazy. It's
just a side note. Rich plays Sudoku every day or whatever.
Sudoku. Yeah. No. Those are lottery numbers, man. Those are.
It's a touch intimidating, but also really exciting.
Yeah. So. Tell us about that experience winning your first pro race.
Yeah, I mean, so it's actually been pretty much just a little over 5 years to the day since I did my first Ironman as an age grouper. So it's basically been a 5-year journey, and a lot of it just had to be belief actually on the day. I mean, I think I've actually had the fitness looking back at previous Ironmans, and it was just a few little things that I didn't do, and some of them were mental belief wise, and others were just sort of like kind of a lack of a taper and a lack of going into the race as fresh as I could. And it was pretty much the best day of my life.
Well, I heard in the interview with Dave Downey that you said the two best days of your life were when you won Chatty 70.3 and then when you won the full. And talk about that and what Chattanooga, the town of Chattanooga, kind of how it makes you feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's, if you looked at it, like, I think there's probably very, very few professionals that have won their first 70.3 and Ironman in the same town. For some reason, I just feel a really big connection to that town. I didn't expect I would feel when I first went to Chattanooga 70.3, like, honestly, I was kind of just going, it was more of like a B or even C level race. But it was convenient in the timing of the year. So I just kind of said, okay, I'll go. And as soon as I got there, I was like, whoa, like, if you haven't ever been there, like if everything's just like really green and lush, you know, there's the Tennessee River flowing through. And then there's actually like, I mean, I won't call them mountains because they're not mountains compared to here, but, there may be very large hills, you know, that kind of sit all around Chattanooga and sort of surround the downtown area. So it's just a really beautiful area. And then everyone's like super friendly. And but I just kind of, found myself like relaxed and at peace and motivated to like get out there and do something. And the bike course, like, it just suits my style of riding perfectly. It's kind of a bigger, stronger rider, like. And there's really no sustained climbs. Like, I always just think about sustaining my speed the entire course. So basically trying to maintain as much momentum as I can on the uphills. And if I focus on that, both times I've ridden very fast there, just focusing on that one thing pretty much.
There's a lot of elevation gain in that, right? How many, do we know how many feet there is?
4,800.
Yeah, so that's pretty significant.
It's definitely like it's not a flat course by any. I mean, that's more elevation game than Boulder.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I assume they're pretty punchy hills. Like, you probably get a lot of little reliefs here and there going down, I would assume.
Absolutely. Yep. Because they're pretty punchy, and usually they're like, you know, one after another, and so, you know, you try and pick up your speed a lot on the downhill, which is where I think actually being heavier helps on this course, because you pick up your speed on the downhill and then. Like, I can carry it most of the way up the next uphill and then just have to kind of put in a little bit more power to get it over the top without losing a lot of speed.
We heard you tell Dave Downey in the interview after the race that the bike was actually easier than you thought. And I think you may have had that discussion with Bill separately. Talk about that. I mean, like, was it just that, you know, was it the mental changes that you made with not using a computer? What was it that made it seem easier?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I wish I had a completely concrete answer to this, and I'm trying to find one because I was just like, I was in a total flow state this whole bike, and frankly, it felt like it was maybe a 90-minute ride in zone two. That's pretty much what it felt like to me. And actually going into the race, I was the least confident of my bike, of any race I've done this year, and I was the least confident of my biking ability of the three this time. Because I, like, yeah, as I've said, like, I raced with no computer, so I didn't have time. All I had was distance every 10 miles marked on the course, and I didn't have power. And I was actually training like this for, like, the last month. You know, I would just kind of put the bike computer in my back pocket and not look at it. And I'd have an idea of intervals I wanted to do, but I didn't feel that good on the bike in the last month. So I actually did only one interval session between Nice and here. And otherwise, I just rode for, like, 4 hours aerobic in the mountains most days and tried to end with, like, you know, 20 or 30 minutes at Ironman pace. And that was really all I did on the bike, and then one interval session. So I was like, oh, I don't really know how good my biking is. And then I showed up, and it was just like immediately in the zone. Immediately my legs were feeling good, but like light. It was like I could pedal at a high cadence, even though I was in a big gear. And then just, yeah, really, like, mentally the miles were just going by. And I, like, I was having fun on the bike. A lot of times it's like I do these Ironman bikes, and I'm so focused on, oh, I want to be in the lead, and oh, I need to hit a certain wattage, and you know, X, Y, and Z, that it's like mechanical and not really fun. And this, I was like, I'm just going to ride my bike. Like, so I was like smiling on the course, and I mean, I came into the lead at mile 40 with no intention of doing that, and then just said, okay, let's just roll with it.
So, all right. So how did that change your strategy on the run?
So it totally changed my strategy on the run. My original strategy was to sit in on the bike and let the others, I was mostly thinking of Matt Russell set the pace, but also maybe Andrew Talansky, because I knew he was there and he's strong on the bike. And then basically come off as a group and then try and let them set the first half pace of the run and try and kind of do an evenly paced run. Because I knew, okay, whatever they do on the first lap, if I then did that on the second lap, they would probably slow down. And if I didn't, then I'd win. But obviously then I ended up, you know, pulling ahead by quite a margin on the bike. But I didn't think I was that far ahead. I thought I had like 90 seconds to 2 minutes is what I thought I had.
Oh.
So my plan was actually still, as I came into transition, was kind of to do something similar as what I had planned. I was like, oh, I'll maybe even let them catch me because then I can just sort of rest, you know, and they'll have to burn a lot of matches just to catch me. And then I'll be able to kind of throw down, you know, at like mile 18-ish. But when I exited the change tent, everyone's telling me, I heard that I had between 8 and 10 minutes. So I quickly changed my strategy into like a pretty aggressive, positive split run because I knew if I could get ahead by enough. So I set a goal of getting a 13-minute lead by mile 13 of the run because then I figured, okay, that's a minute a mile. I knew my competitors would be hearing this and it would just totally crush their spirit to try and beat me. And that's what I did. It actually got up to 15 minutes by mile like 16. And, by then I think they kind of it's not that they gave up, but they gave up on thinking they could beat me. And then I kind of paid the price for that fast paced first half, but, I would do that same strategy again. And the whole last 11 miles was just about keeping things under control and playing it smart.
How do you keep track of all that?
Oh, you know, I had a watch on. I had my Suunto on the run. And so this time, like, a lot of times in an Ironman, I'm not really that clear-headed, you know. It's like you're not making decisions. And it's just like, go, 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 go. But this time, like, I was remarkably clear-headed, like, really until, like, mile 22 of the run. Like, oh, this is how much I'm ahead. This is how much faster they'd have to run per mile. This is what they're going to be thinking about it. Like, yeah, I was really clear-headed.
And you get a pretty good sense of how far back they are just based on different people yelling something to you, or because it's a loop, do you see them, or how did you do that?
Yeah, I only saw them at like mile 12. That was the only point I saw them. But I could see they were like, you know, actually like 14 minutes behind me, which helped to see that visually, like, oh, that's like a long ways to go to catch up to me. But otherwise, like, I had three people on course that actually are from Bolt, that actually are from Boulder. And so they were, those people, like, I was really trusting their splits. Other people, like, I was kind of performing an average of their splits. So some people say, oh, whatever, 10 minutes. And other people are like, you're 18 minutes ahead. And you kind of perform somewhat of an average over time, you know.
So I had a slightly different question than Bill's, which was, how do you keep track of all this? Which is, how are you coming up with these, like, mental strategies and kind of the mental game of your opponents, like, on the fly like that? I mean, the last person who I remember hearing kind of talk about, like, mental strategies like that, like, how do you get your competitors to feel a certain way, was Chris McCormick. And he was a master at that. That sounds like something you think about, or at least it's on your mind during the race. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm happy to be compared to him in terms of his mental strategy. He was the best in the game at it. But I do quite a lot of, like, especially for this race, like, I kind of, from like 10 days to 5 days out, like, every night I kind of gave, like, oh, I'm going quote unquote to bed at this time. But I knew, like, I would basically lie in bed for an hour thinking about how the race would unfold and different strategies I could do. And one of the cool things I think that I get most of my stuff off of and how I make my decisions is my previous Ironman. So while I'm only 23, this is my 15th Ironman start. So I've learned a lot in those 15 Ironmans about, like, oh, when I do certain things, you know, this has happened. And I've just kind of followed the sport and seen how others race and what's worked and what hasn't. And so really the biggest thing for how I made this decision for a positive split run was because of my experience at Louisville last year, where I was second. And it was almost an identical situation. I came off the bike 8 minutes ahead. In that instance, it was Chris Lieferman. And I said, like, oh, perfect. Like, I should have a great gap. I'm just going to, like, shoot for a very evenly split marathon. And the problem with that was, like, I ran basically 130. Well, no, I ran like 127 for the first half, but he ran 121, you know? So now he's ran 6 minutes into me in the first half, and Lieferman then got this huge mental boost, like, oh, I'm going to catch him. And he ended up running a 238, which, like, I think there's no way he would have done. Say if I had just run, you know, 123 for the first half or 124, he would have gone, oh, shoot, I still have 5 minutes to gain over the first half, and he probably would have slowed the pace down. And, like, literally just with a different strategy, I maybe would have won that race. So that's kind of how I decided it, even though overall it's actually, like, if you were an age grouper, I would never say, oh, you know, in the first half of the marathon much, much faster than the second half, because I ran the first half in 126 and the second half and, like, whatever, that would get me to 306. So, you know, an hour, yeah, like an hour 33 or something.
So one of the things I noticed is that you had running shorts on the run. So you actually changed in the changing tent from your tri kit into some running shorts. Talk about that decision.
Yeah. So I've been thinking about it a lot, and I actually did this at Ironman Whistler last year when it was 100 degrees. But for whatever reason, then I hadn't done it since. And I just know, like, whenever I do, say, a brick ride, or even if I have like a 1 mile run, like, I don't wear my bike chamois ever in training. I don't wear the race. Like, I would never wear my race kit. Like, oh, I'm going for my Sunday long run, I decided to put my race kit on. So I just thought, like, and being a taller guy, like, I've never gotten a tri suit that actually, like, feels like it's long enough for me. And so even though it's just a light, very light material, it feels like it's sort of, it has a way of, like, it feels like it pulls my shoulders down to my hips, and it causes me to kind of run as if I've just ridden 116 miles. While if I take that off, like, I just feel taller, and I like looser fitting clothes. I think they, for me, it allows more wind and it allows more evaporation. So it was kind of a factor of being more comfortable, and then I thought it was cooler too. And I was incredibly glad I made this decision, because, like, as soon as I put it on, I was comfortable. I was comfortable for the whole run. like even when I finish, usually I finish, and if I wear the tri kit, like I have to get out of it like immediately. And now like I still wore, like I wore the run kit outfit for like the next 3 hours, and I was totally comfortable. So I think I'm honestly going to do that in all future Ironmans. It works so well for me, and I kind of, I don't know, devised a quick strategy to change that. Like I still had the, I had the fastest T2 by like 15 seconds still. So, so I'm not like I'm losing big time.
Right.
It's interesting when you look back at, you know, old footage from say the Iron War days. That's what they were wearing. They weren't wearing tri kits.
I know. Yeah.
I don't know why it changed.
I was thinking about that because, like, Mark Allen held the run course record until like 2 years ago. And he's a phenomenal athlete, but I don't know of any records that have held for that long. And part of that, I go, well, maybe is that because he's like wearing, you know, a proper run outfit that he's able to sort of run better.
I was wondering that too. I mean, the only thing I can think of, if I were to do another Ironman, I would probably do exactly what you just talked about, changing into run gear. I never have felt comfortable with that really tight tri kit. I mean, but I will say it is nice to hold ice.
Right.
Did you miss that part of it?
Well, so I wore a hat. Normally I wear a visor, and because of this, I wore a hat. So, okay, I can put ice in the hat. And the shorts still, like, they had a big kind of net thing in them, so I could still put ice down the shorts.
Okay.
And then mostly, like, yeah, I guess not really ice on the chest, but, I mean, I was still getting sponges on there and stuff. So I actually thought it was, like, a pretty equivalent strategy. And frankly, like, I've heard from a lot of age groupers, and they're like, oh, like, how come you changed? I've always, like, wanted to change in an Ironman, but, like, I've always seen none of the professionals change, and so it's kind of not the look to change. And I think a lot of them are like, cool, now they see me and they're like, oh, they can change, you know. And especially, like, you know, if you're doing an Ironman for the sake of finishing, I mean, for me it might have taken me five or ten extra seconds to change. For them it might be an extra minute. That's not a big deal, you know, if you're going for 12 hours or something.
Huh, interesting. Well, I have a kind of a two-part question.
Okay.
Let's say it's the year 2029. Is Sam Long going to be racing in 2029, 10 years from now? And I'm assuming that the answer might be yes, but I'll let you answer in a second. How do you keep from, you've done a lot in your fast career so far. How do you keep from being that, you know, shooting star, so to speak, and sort of level off into a career that has sustainability if that's what you want? And the second part of that question is, what are you telling Sam Long in 2029 from what you've learned so far? What are the three key things you've learned that you would tell Sam Long in 2029?
Yeah. Okay. First off, I hope to be racing even well past 2029, because I'll only be 33 then, right?
Right. So, right.
I hope maybe even 2039 would be pretty cool to be racing till then. And yeah, what I've really learned is, like, I have to kind of control myself this year more so than any other year. Is like last year I raced 5 Ironmans, but I actually was like quite fresh all last year. And this year, like, I got myself into some almost very near like big trouble with overtraining in July. I look back and it was pretty scary. Like I think I was maybe 2% away from getting like severe overtraining syndrome. So it's, yeah, really holding myself back is ultimately the thing. And to kind of get to racing, you know, till for another 15 years. And yeah, what I've learned, what I tell myself and what I'm already telling myself is, like, to kind of be patient with it, which we can even just talk about Kona a little bit with that. Like, in the whole last time, like, in the whole last few years, I always thought, oh, Kona's kind of like my main priority and I want to get to Kona so bad. And then really just in the last 6 months, it changed. Like, okay, I need to kind of think about, like, when's the best time for me to get to Kona, and how do I race in such a way and set up my schedule for years and years that I'm then able to hit Kona and race Kona really well, you know, in my peak when I have the best odds of, let's say, winning the race. And granted, I still think with all that, like, I still want to, you know, live a great life and take opportunities. So it's finding a balance between those two things. And then I tell myself it's kind of two things in one thing. One is to always continue having fun in this sport. If I'm not having fun, I actually don't race well. So there's this sort of, I don't know, thought, at least in my mind, I sort of get this vibe out there that, like, oh, the more serious you get, the better you'll race. But actually for me, like, if I get too serious, I'm going to race terrible and I'm not going to have any fun. And then as a consequence of having fun is I can't be like anyone else. I just have to be me. And so part of this year, like, where I got into trouble, it was like I started, you know, I've got a lot of my role models like Lindsey Corbin and Ben Hoffman and Jan Frodeno and people like that. And I saw their social media and said, oh, I kind of like, I want to be like them, you know, and I started trying to do things like them and it didn't work. And so now I'm like, you know what? All I can do is be me and have fun being me. And that's two things.
I think that's great. I think that's really awesome. I kind of think that in endurance sports, it's got fun. It's got to be part of the equation because, you know, in basketball, you can go out and work on your jumper and kind of have fun in the gym and you're not necessarily beating yourself up by training. But in endurance sports, you have to gear up every day to go kind of beat yourself up. And it's, exactly. You got to have fun doing it.
And like, especially, you know, a lot of it's solo, I think, no matter what, like as a professional, like I think everyone's doing at least 50% of their training solo. So you got to find a way, one, to enjoy that solo training. But for me, I got to find a way to make social training happen, I think, because, and okay, if it means I'm maybe doing someone else's workout a little bit or modifying my own workout, I think it's worth it because it means I'm having fun and like that's going to extend my career by a lot.
Is that a shout out to the Wednesday morning velo by chance?
Oh yeah, totally. yeah. Well, as you guys know, like I'm one of the few, but not a whole lot of triathletes go and do group rides. And I'm a big fan of doing a lot of group rides and especially the Wednesday morning velo one, because it's a great community and you got to meet people and it's very social, you know?
Yeah. I keep trying to get up there more often. And then when my alarm goes off, I'm like, ugh, I don't want to drive to Boulder, but I need to do that. I'm going to make a bigger point of it next year for sure.
So Sam, just going back to the season, and you talked about this patch where you were doing some overtraining or coming very close to overtraining. Listen, we saw you come across the finish line at Ironman Boulder and Ironman Boulder 70.3. We're here for that. And, you know, talk about those results and were those results partly because of the overtraining, or where were you at during those races, do you think?
So absolutely. And I actually think both of them, I was in very different places. I'll start with Ironman Boulder just because it was earlier in the year. Looking back, I actually had like quite a good race within the day at Ironman Boulder, all things considered. I had just raced, like it was my last race of a whole series of races. So I had done St. George and then I had done 70.3 Chattanooga and 70.3 Victoria, which I had won the last two. And 70.3 Victoria was 1 week before Ironman Boulder. And unfortunately, I just made, well, let's say my coach and I made really, really poor decisions that week. He had me do, I did a 10-mile track workout Tuesday. So I won a 70.3 on Sunday. And then on Tuesday, I did something like, you know, 10 or 12 800s at a 5:30 pace per mile or something, you know.
Wow.
Which just, like, looking back, like, that just made no sense. Clearly I was fit. Clearly I was ready. Like, I remember even going out that day and being like, man, I don't feel good. And I was like, why the heck do I have a 10-mile track workout in my plan? But at that time I was following the plan. You know, that's what athletes are supposed to do, I guess. I don't really think that anymore. And then lo and behold, on Wednesday, I actually got sick. So I was actually sick, and I tried to just say, oh, it's allergies, because that time of year you can kind of blame anything on allergies, and I was trying to get myself mentally, like, hyped up, but I was sick. I was sick going into the race, not to mention, you know, I wasn't resting, and my coach had even said something to me like, make sure you don't like overeat this week. We need you to stay like really lean and mean for this race. So, okay, I win a 70.3. I do a track workout and I'm not eating and recovering enough from food for the race, let alone, you know, getting my glycogen storage replenished for the Ironman. So basically, I actually think with like literally changing those two different things, Ironman Boulder, and yes, I still raced a 70.3 the weekend before. My legs might have been a little heavy, but if I hadn't done those two things, I think Ironman Boulder would have looked very, very different on the day. I think I would have felt pretty good. I know I would have done better than I did. So Ironman Boulder on the day, like, I just did not feel good really all day, but I fought through, and I still managed to get fifth. So I looked at Ironman Boulder, and I actually go, that was one of the better races I've had, like, considering what I had on the day.
Right. Yep.
And then 70.3 Boulder. So then after Boulder, then is when I basically got into this. Let's just say we continued the mindset of let's do a 10-mile track workout the Tuesday after 70.3, but in training for, you know, an 8-week build. Things got really insane. And then when I went into my taper for Lake Placid, which my whole body shut down, and then I DNF'd Lake Placid, but I had put my name on the start list for 70.3 Boulder, which was the next weekend as a just in case. I then had a bike crash that Wednesday between 70.3 Boulder. But at that point I was just like, oh, I just kind of want to like get my mojo back. And so I raced 70.3 Boulder, and the bike crash just sort of affected me. I was eighth. I didn't have a very good day, but I wasn't really racing at 70.3 Boulder for me. That was just kind of something for me to do to like actually feel good about myself and prove that like I was still, I guess, an athlete. And looking back, it might have been smarter. At the time, I hadn't really acknowledged yet that, oh, what was happening was that I was overtrained. I just thought like, oh, I didn't get my taper right and stuff. And looking back, it would have been smarter to just not have raced that race and taken like, you know, that whole week between off, and then even like the week after 70.3 Boulder off.
You showed up with duct tape on your wounds to race that race. I was like, man, you're tough.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was one tough race.
Awesome. Hey, so, all right. So you're qualified for Kona. Has a decision been made for Kona, and do you have any decisions for the races that you want to race leading up to Kona next year?
Yes. I mean, most likely I'll say I'll go to Kona. I won't say it's definitive. And here's what I'll say it's contingent on, which this is actually an excellent thing. It's contingent on me getting better at swimming. So, like, I don't want to show up at Kona with my current swim ability. I just don't think it would be a fun way to race. I think I'd be on my back foot all day. So I'm like, it gets me really motivated to work on my swim this winter. And that's great because I've kind of needed that extra motivation. Because, you know, when it's like, oh, you can go and you can, I guess, win an Ironman and not swim that good, you're kind of like, oh, do I really need to swim better? But I'm like, I need to swim better. So that's absolutely a priority. And so I'd say like, once I can swim better than, which I think I can, there's really promising signs in the pool right now. So, I'm motivated to do that. And yeah, I think I have a lot of next year figured out. And for people listening, like this is, it could all still change, but this is kind of quite a tentative plan. I'll do an early season 70.3. I'm not sure what yet. It's probably going to be 70.3 Texas. And then I really want to hit Ironman St. George. So that'll kind of let me know, okay, where am I at? And that's a good race to sort of track my swim because it's going to be the North American Championship. So you're going to need a fast swim there as well.
Cool. Yeah.
And then May is going to be kind of my May mayhem again. So then I'm going to go back to Chattanooga 70.3 and I'm going to go back to Victoria 70.3. So it'll be three races in May, and one of them being an Ironman. But then I'm actually going to chill. Like all of June is just going to be relaxed. It's just going to be low intensity based training. really kind of letting me get mentally refreshed. So like that whole first part's like kind of the first peak of the season, and then I'm going to rebuild in July. July is kind of a rebuilding phase. I want to do Xterra Beaver Creek. I miss not doing
it. Cool. All right.
And then I think I'll do 70.3 Boulder. But that, like, not as a super high priority race, just kind of to get my fitness tuned up and see where I'm at. And then I want to do Ironman Canada on August 30th. And then Kona would be what would be after that.
Awesome season. So,
just out of curiosity, how does it work for a pro, you know, as an age grouper, you have to decide on the spot to take that Kona slot. Do you have, what's the latitude for a pro to go to Kona? Even if you qualify, you don't have to necessarily commit right away.
Yeah. And here's the thing, even if I commit, as a pro, like, which you shouldn't do, but people do it all the time. People pull out, you know, last minute. So, which I don't plan on doing that. But I don't have to let them know, like, really anytime quite soon. And, they won't make the start list, I don't think, until like August. So for me, it's letting them know by the time the start list comes out. Cause I would hate, like, for my name to then be on the start list and then not show up. Which I know, like, at 70.3 Worlds, there were like 6 or 7 guys who were on the start list who didn't show up. So I know you can sort of pull out really last minute, but that's not how I want to approach it.
Hey, so I've got a follow-up question on your season next year. Are you going to go back and defend your title at Napa Marathon?
I don't think so. I mean, oh God, it was an awesome experience, and it was something I really needed to do, like, for this year. But I've kind of realized, like, I gotta just choose. Like, I think that was, I mean, I've won 4 races this year, so that was one of my 4 best days I've had this year. And I've kind of realized, like, I just have to be a little bit more selective of which days I really want to, like, lay it on the line. And that cost, like, the Napa Marathon, in terms of, like, it cost me a lot in terms of output. I was the most sore from that race that I've ever been in my life. I mean, right. I was literally 4 times as sore as I was after winning Chattanooga. So, I'd love to keep doing stuff like that. And the original plan was actually to do the Boston Marathon with my girlfriend, because she qualified as well. But then it's like the timing of that, especially, you know, that's the middle of April. That's like, if I do that, that's going to set me back.
Right. And
really, the May races can happen. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm getting smarter, actually.
We saw you on your, you got your Suunto gear on this morning. We saw that when we got on the call. Talk about your sponsors. How are the sponsors reacting to this?
Oh, yeah, all my sponsors are over the moon. and yeah, Suunto's been awesome, because they're kind of, you know, they've got all their partner sponsors, so Cervelo, my race kit, Castelli, Shimano. It's kind of the full setup, you know, Blue 70, they set me up with everything. And they've always kind of just, they've never really, what I've enjoyed is they've never dictated, like, oh, you need to do, like, your season this way and that way. They're always just kind of like, whoa, we love what you do. You know, like, you're going and doing a marathon and you're doing all sorts of stuff. And, it was really cool. And First Endurance as well is, like, I really saw all my sponsors believe in me. You know, it wasn't like, when I did this, it was like, whoa, like, we're shocked you did this. It was kind of like, wow, we've always known you can do this. Like, great job. We believed in you this whole time, you know, which was, I thought, quite a nice reaction. Like, they've kind of believed in me all throughout, and they're totally stoked on it. They're like, let's ride this wave. Let's get it going into next year. And, yeah, so they've been really great.
Are they, I mean, I'm assuming they're hoping you're going to do Kona.
Yeah, I would assume so. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I think you're a big skier, are you not, Sam?
Yep, absolutely.
So that's coming up, and you're in Crested Butte right now. I know that you said earlier, which is pretty sweet. You got any? How do you approach skiing now with kind of some stuff on the line here? I'm assuming you don't jump off the cliffs anymore, do you?
I still do.
Of course.
I figured. I was trying to bait you, and you took it. I love it. That's awesome.
I know. I should say, oh, no, I've gotten more conservative. But if you guys know, if you know anything about me, you know that's not how I live my life, right? Let's just put it this way. If I used to jump, like, 20-foot cliffs, I keep it to 10-foot cliffs now. So I keep it, like...
Oh, you've toned it down.
Yeah, I keep it, like, within... Like, I always think when I'm going off of this, like, something in the winter, like, make sure you can land this, you know, like, because I do think about it. But thankfully, I think, like, my skiing ability is actually, like, really, really high that I'm kind of able to still do that stuff and have it be really low risk. Ironically, like, actually the times I've, well, on a bike too, but all the times I've actually, like, gotten injured or, you know, crashed and stuff is actually when you're, like, trying to play it so conservative, because then you're not focused, you know. You're like, oh, I'm out on an easy spin, and you're not paying any attention, and you make a turn and slip on gravel, as opposed to if you're, like, doing some gnarly descent, you're 100% focused. So it's kind of the same in skiing. Like, if I said, oh, I'm just going to ski groomers all year, well, one, I wouldn't even go out, but two, I wouldn't be paying attention, and then I would probably have a big fall.
Your brothers, do your brothers make any dares while you're skiing? Don't they ski with you?
Yeah, well... Mostly some, actually my sister's husband, he's the real deal on ski. I mean, I'm talking backflips off cliffs and stuff. So I usually ski with him, and he has a good way of pushing me. But yeah, my whole family's skiing, and I've already gotten my epic pass, and my plans to ski, like, I'm going to just do the typical periodization, you know, 3 weeks on and then about 1 week off. And so I'm going to go skiing basically for, it won't be a full week, but basically probably four days every month of the winter, and just, it'll keep me fresh and it'll keep me motivated. And then when it gets to the time of the season, like, I won't have already be in a hole, you know, I'll be totally mentally fresh.
Yeah. Awesome. Right on, buddy. Hey, thanks for coming back on the show and giving us an update on how that race went. I mean, it's the buzz. I mean, you're blowing up on social media, so we're really glad we have you for the show.
Yeah, awesome. It'll be good to get it out to all the Colorado people.
Yep, coming out this weekend, my friend.
Okay. Oh, sweet. Right on.
Bill, anything else?
No, thanks a lot, Sam, and really appreciate the time today and the phone call earlier in the week to help me get a better understanding of your race and get an article out. That was much appreciated, and have fun in Crested Butte.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, guys.
Discussion is sponsored by Halo Neuroscience. The Halo Sport from Halo Neuroscience will help you learn the technique and form to get faster. 20 minutes of neural priming with the Halo headset gives you an hour of neuroplasticity to work and lock in muscle movement that leads to strength, power, and endurance. Use the code MHE at checkout to save $20 off of a Halo 2. There you go. Bill, what is new in the 303? Can we talk about this article you wrote about Sam?
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, it's a good... We just talked to him, but yeah, I think it was fun to catch up with him. I think he must have been driving somewhere right after the race. I talked to him Monday morning after the race, so it was hot off the press, as they say. It was interesting to hear some of his strategy, and I loved how he shared the naked bike, so to speak, without a computer. And it sounds like my summary was he just, he got a little frustrated this year after having a success and then sort of having, I wouldn't say not success, he still was doing good, but he just wasn't quite keeping the momentum going. So he thought, I'll try something different. And so he did. And voila, he wins Ironman Chattanooga.
And to discover that his bike was rubbing, or his brake was rubbing. Oh my God.
I loved how he just bought a new bike, and then he fitted it himself, and then he basically shipped it off to Switzerland, didn't see it for 3 weeks, gets it in Chattanooga. Oh, my brake's rubbing, no wonder. And then he's hardly ridden it, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Very interesting. Well, what else is doing the 303? It's not going to be you and us. We're not going to be in the 303 for very much longer.
Oh, we're not. And we've just been trying to get ready for Kona, of course. Had a fun experience earlier this week. I went down to USA Cycling for a press conference, and it was an announcement for a new mountain bike event in Colorado Springs Micah Rice, who used to be with USA Cycling and Haute Route. He was the race director or the event director for Haute Route. He's now with this organization that's putting together this 4-day mountain bike race. And he invited people down to hear the announcement and so forth. And it's a pretty big deal. I mean, I don't mountain bike too much. So part of the event was to go mountain biking then with Micah, and then basically three pro mountain bikers, one who had just returned from Israel, having done a UCI event, Russell Finsterwald. And these guys, oh my gosh, they're so good. Like, it was so humbling to go on these single track trails, which in my opinion were technical, in their opinion they weren't, but they're just doing wheelies down the trail and bouncing over rocks, going super fast. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But it was really a neat experience. I didn't realize really how awesome mountain biking is in Colorado Springs.
Oh, I'll bet you it's awesome.
Well, it's interesting because I've been to Colorado Springs, you know, lots of times, but hadn't really paid attention to it from a biking standpoint. There's not a lot of great road riding, and there's a lot of kind of valleys in Colorado Springs, and you know, there's a lot of trails inside the city, unlike Denver, which is, you know, just flat. Any trail in Denver is just flat, and it's not really nearly the same kind of topography.
You're much closer to the mountains in Colorado Springs than you are in Denver.
Well, and the there's spines of
yep
mountain coming into the city, so yep. It provides natural trails.
Lots of bluffs and stuff.
Lots of bluffs, yeah. It was really cool. And so I somewhat naively, we kind of needed a new survey. So I thought, well, I'll just, because I think Colorado Springs is a little bit overlooked in some ways. Denver, in Colorado, Denver is kind of the story usually. So I just put a survey up. I said, which place do you think of for mountain biking more? And my two answers, because that's all I would allow, was I put Boulder/Lyons or Colorado Springs. That was just kind of just picking two cities, right?
That's cool.
No, nothing intentional necessarily, other than I thought I would draw attention to Colorado Springs to help in the article I was going to publish about mountain biking. Well, holy cow, that blew up on the site because I hadn't really thought about it. Boulder has really clamped down on allowing mountain bikers on trails.
Oh. And
so despite the fact there's still in Boulder, according to like mountain bike project, there's still lots of trails, but there's still, there's a lot of trails that are not accessible. Oh my gosh. People are like, why would you choose Boulder? We can't bike up here. You know,
you picked open a scab, dude.
I totally picked open a scab, which actually is kind of, in some ways it was good because it brought some awareness. And now I want to do an article about it in terms of what do you do in Boulder? Like, that's really difficult. And the Boulder Mountain Bike Alliance even commented on it, and you know, they've got their hands full, right? And there's a city up there that's not very welcome to mountain biking. So it's kind of it was an interesting twist that I wasn't expecting.
We'll have to follow that thread.
Yeah. So that was a fun thing this week for sure.
Very cool. Well, can we stay on the 303 theme here for a second and talk about a couple of our 303 Kona Colorado athletes?
Yeah, I just want to make one more comment.
Oh, yeah.
So I put up a video. I don't know if you saw it. Just happened to run across it. So at the, I think it's Chicago Marathon coming up, they have a...
I saw that.
Did you see that video where the...
the big treadmill?
The big treadmill, and they put it at the speed of the...
Pace? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Talk about it. It's awesome.
It's like... Yeah, so they put this treadmill at the pace of what's his name, Kipchoge.
He's got the 201 marathon, something 201 plus marathon time.
So people are invited to get up on this treadmill and try to run his pace for that marathon, and people are falling on their face. And I mean, it's fast.
It's not an ordinary treadmill either. This thing's like 20 yards long.
It's like a highway up there. It's huge.
It's cool.
But it was amazing how fast that is. And they said on that video that, so when he's running that pace, he's covering 200 meters in 34 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could cover 200 meters in 34 seconds at this age.
There were some people that couldn't cover it for 5 seconds and went down and flew off the back of that thing.
That's just remarkable fast.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So let's talk about some athletes.
All right. You want to start with Aaron?
Yeah, let's start with Aaron. Aaron is, where'd it go? Here we go. So I don't know Aaron. Do you know Aaron?
I don't know Aaron, but this would be great for let's get to know Aaron.
This is his second time back in Kona, according to Aaron, and hoping for a little redemption, he said. Apparently his first one wasn't his favorite, but what he's most excited about, just soaking up the race week, the experience of being there and just taking everything in. He did I'm considering it more of a victory lap. I qualified for Kona at Ironman Boulder this year, and then the following week proceeded to start the Leadman Race Series. Wow, that's a lot. And so it's been a long and busy year, so I'm excited to be there and with family and friends. What's your favorite career Ironman memory so far? And he says, drinking beers on State Street with family and friends the night before qualifying at Wisconsin back in 2013. That and running down a Lehi Drive. So much emotion and feeling in those last couple hundred yards. So wait, he was drinking beers before. Does that mean he did it before? Yeah, I guess it was before the race, not before the qualifying party, I guess.
I don't know, Aaron. Look for a follow-up question from us in person while we're there. We got some questions for you, my friend.
Yeah, and if someone were watching this that is new to the sport, what would you tell them is the coolest thing about being a triathlete and competing in this venue? I think there's something to be said about sharing this course and the day with the world's best athletes. Coolest thing about this venue, everything you see on TV, the magic and the mystique of the island is so true. And what do you think is the hardest thing about doing an Ironman? Like training for any endurance sport, knowing when to hold back to stave off injury and or burnout, the hardest thing about actually executing the Ironman race is pulling everything together, pacing, nutrition, race strategy, etc. For me, it's how you manage those variables and unknowns that are thrown at you on race day that separate you from having a great race day to an okay race.
That's great.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's great. You know, something to learn from these athletes that have qualified for Kona.
Yeah.
Right? Well,
looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah, hopefully. For sure. Now, Nikki Leo is our other featured guest, and I really grabbed these at random. But we know Leo. We know Nikki.
Yeah. Do you know her pretty well? She lives down your way, I think.
Well, we've met at several events together, and we've spent some time together. So let me tell you a little bit about Nikki Leo. So the question, what are you most excited about in competing in Kona? I am most excited to experience the Legend course, to personally feel the heat, humidity, and the winds that are so infamous. I'm also excited to see in person at one time many of my heroes in the sport. Triathlon is genuinely one of the only sports in the world where you get to compete on the same field, a field of play as the professionals, and she's really excited about that. Is this your first time competing in Kona? And the answer is simply yes. I have always wanted to qualify and came close a couple of times. However, in 2018, she had her first DNF. Bummer, Nikki. At Ironman Boulder, which was supposed to be her 11th Ironman. She did Ironman Canada, which turned out to be number 11. But she was destroyed about that DNF at Boulder. That's a bummer. So she registered for Louisville to get in into the legacy list, and she qualified.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's very cool. Let's see here. What do you think is the hardest part of Ironman? The time it takes, time and energy that it takes, the fear you have to overcome to test yourself and to do it for you. The first one is always about you, and then you drink the Kool-Aid, and for some reason it changes. And I have a love-hate relationship with Ironman because of this. I think the family and culture it creates can be amazing, but I've also seen it destroy people. So I think the hardest thing is not to lose yourself, and don't lose sight of what Ironman is in your life. That is, it is a hobby and sport you enjoy, and unless you are a pro, it does not define you. I think it's great advice.
That's a pretty interesting comment. I think that's very true. Sure.
Yeah, I think it destroys if you it's like anything else, right? If you have an addictive personality and you can let something consume you and push everything else out, it's going to destroy relationships. and other things. So, yeah. Nice. Well,
I know for me, healthy it's been interesting not to have it to train for. And I still find myself feeling weird if I don't go get a big workout. I'm getting over it, but it's taken me a while to get used to that.
Right.
And to actually have days where I don't work out and just be fine when I'm doing stuff, work or whatever. It's it takes a long time to get used to that.
Yeah. You didn't do any races triathlons races this year. But did you feel like you lost any of your identity through that? I mean,
no, I don't feel like that. I think my only concern is, you know, it's been a while since I've competed and I guess I feel like as running 303, which is obviously about triathlon and other sports, but do I need to once in a while come out of the closet, so to speak, and crack off a good race just to have some credibility is my question. Maybe not. It's not like I had some long illustrious career where I, you know, had this the win or that win or whatever. So do I feel like I have to sort of reprove myself every once in a while? I think I do. I feel that way. I don't know if that's accurate if I need to, but
yeah,
there's a little bit of pressure there that way.
Yep. I feel that too. I still race and train because I like it, but if I didn't at all, I would be having those same thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So I had, you know, it's interesting. And yeah. I had a period of time where I had some success. And so to go out and race and not have success, I have to be honest, it kind of intimidates me right now.
It does. Do you ever have any, when we're in Kona, knowing that you almost qualified for Kona, do you still ever think about what if?
Not really.
No?
No, because I think it hit me a couple years ago when I realized that, you know, it would be awesome, of course. And I'm sure that last coming down Leahy Drive and the finish line and knowing that you competed at Kona and succeeded, even finishing is a success, obviously. But at the end of the day, it's still 140.6 miles. And I've done that.
Sure. I know.
So do I have anything to really prove kind of thing?
Yep. Right.
And so, no, I don't have any regrets at all or any woulda, coulda, shouldas or anything like that.
Yeah. Good. Good. Good.
It's just a lot of pain. I'm not ready to face. If I were to do Kona, any Ironman is a lot of pain, but I think that heat would just kill me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Kona, because like one of the things that we did last year, which was pretty awesome, was we did that run from the Energy Lab just to kind of get that experience. And of course, we swim out to the coffee boat every day and we get to, you know, basically be in the same water and do that. We've never ridden out there. We'd love to take our bikes one of these days.
I know.
That'd be awesome.
We should try and secure some. I bet we could.
I bet you we could get some bikes.
Yeah.
We should bring our helmets and our cycling shoes just in case.
I always do, just in case.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
And your pedals too, right?
Yep. Yeah,
of course. Oh, well, that is what I am doing this year. We'll figure something out. Well, let's talk at least about the things that we know about. So what we want to do here is we want to tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing while we're in Kona, what to expect from at 303 Triathlon on all of our social media channels. So let's say... Let's go through the week here. We are traveling on Sunday. So Sunday's kind of a wash. We'll just be checking into our hotel and getting settled and going out to Costco and filling up the fridge. But Monday, things start happening. So we've got that follow-up that we're going to do on our interview just a couple of weeks ago with Carrie McCoy and Kona Kids. We're going to go see those kids down there at the King Kamehameha Hotel and take some photos with them. And then talk about the Vega open house.
I don't know a whole lot about it, but the reason I knew about it was I was talking to Team Liza, and she'd mentioned that they're going to the open house. and that maybe we should consider going. So she sent me a copy of the invitation, which is an open invitation to anybody on the island, basically. Yeah. So I guess it's just a introduction as to who Vega is and sort of why they're being the title sponsor.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, yeah.
Should be interesting, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday is the Parade of Nations.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Well, you do this kind of surf right down the middle.
Yep. And I just take a picture of every person holding the sign of their country. And you would think they were on NBC Nightly News because they just get so excited that somebody with a media badge and a camera wants to take their picture. And most of, you know, it's really cool because for the most part, they're in alphabetical order. So, you know, you get each nation as they come. And it's interesting that some of the nations you don't think about would be there necessarily. And, you know, Saudi Arabia last year.
Right. They had one athlete. And she was a female.
One athlete. And as a woman, yeah, yeah. Which is kind of interesting in itself. So, yeah, you run into these people who are just islands at that moment, right? Because they're just the only person from their country or maybe one of two. And then the next country is Germany, where there's 400 people standing there. And they're all super, man, I remember walking through that line and hitting that wall of German. I was like, wow, these people are ready to roll. I mean, they were just, something about their energy was fired up. And then I have to tell you, the United States, come on, guys. You get to the last part of the parade because it's you, and there's like 15 people or whatever, and it's so disappointing. I mean, since we have by far the largest contingency and per capita, the way smallest number of people in this parade.
So how do you think that gets organized? Like, let's compare the German participants from the American participants. How do you think what do you think it is that creates that?
I don't know.
That behavior.
Why are they there?
Yeah, they got 99, 100% of the athletes from Germany. I'm exaggerating. I don't know what the real number is. But a really good participation in the Parade of Nations. Why are we so apathetic about it? Why are we just, you know?
That's a whole 2-hour discussion. Okay. I don't know. I mean, really, I don't know if maybe there's the German Triathlon Federation does a really good job of, you know, hey, come please do this. Come, you know, if they bug them to do that, or if it's just
one of our standard questions with every athlete we interview: did you walk in the Parade of Nations, and why or why not?
Yeah, because I don't know where that burden lies. If it's, you know, does USAT push people to get there? I don't know.
They give them swag. They give them last year they sponsored shirts for all of them, so they all had the same look, and it had a USAT logo on it. Which is kind of good. That was actually a pretty good looking shirt too.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a great question.
Well, we're going to the right place to have to ask the questions.
Right.
Then on Wednesday, am I missing anything? Have I left anything out yet? I'm up to Tuesday. We're good?
We're good.
Okay. Wednesday. So I'm going to go visit with Debbie Potts, who is leading a kind of an industry discussion or an educational kind of seminar on the fat adapted athlete. So that's a topic that she's come on the show to talk about. She's going to be there in person. And if you're out there, be sure to get yourself over there on Wednesday to the Fat Adapted Seminar by Debbie Potts. Then we've got the Training Peaks party that afternoon or that evening.
Which is always fun.
Great chatting with all the guys over at Training Peaks, Dirk Friel and all the folks there. And then Thursday, I think, isn't Thursday the Slow Twitch party?
I'm not sure.
I think
probably right.
I thought it was always Thursday. We've got to figure out that. And then can we talk about you see the bullet I've got there on Friday, the real story? Can we talk about that?
Oh, I guess. Yeah, is that Friday? I think it's Thursday.
Thursday.
Thursday night.
Okay.
Thursday night they have a it's at the Four Seasons, and Bob Babbitt is hosting a get together with Mark Allen and Dave Scott to kind of go behind the scenes of the Iron War and some of the things that maybe weren't quite accurate in the book that came out a long time ago, and maybe some of the things that just weren't discussed or whatever. And they're putting together a more accurate rendition of the Iron War, and it's called, and there's a website that you can go to.
Oh, we're going to put it in the show notes.
It's called 1989thestory.com. And I think this event on Thursday night is kind of the, I don't know, the crowning point of this whole story. And it's going to be live, I guess. I'm not sure on what channels or where exactly. And it's kind of a black tie type event. It's like a very limited number of people can be there. I think it's a couple hundred dollars for the ticket. And I'm not sure where that money goes exactly, if there's a charity or something like that. But should be pretty cool. And then Aleister Brownlee is supposed to pop in, I guess, and get some advice from the Jedis, or essentially.
I can't wait to see him race this distance.
Yeah. Is it how many? He obviously Kona. he's done this distance, right? Or did he get a entry other way?
I'm on it. You keep talking. I'm on it.
Anyway, yeah, that'll be interesting. So I don't know all the ins and outs of what wasn't quite accurate in the book or what is discussed, but it should be a really good, and I'm sure there's a live feed somewhere. So, and Bob Babbitt will do a great job, of course.
So, one of my questions for, oh, we've got the thank God thinking of, or speaking of Bob Babbitt, we've got the thank God I'm not racing party on Friday night. And then alarm clocks are going off at 4 a.m. and we're heading down there for the race, and we'll be covering all day, which will be cool. Are we going to still do the hourly update? Is that part of our gig?
I think we should on some level. I'm not sure about – well, we'll get through that. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, okay. All right, so Aleister Brownlee. We're looking for – let me see here. There it is. Aleister Brownlee, Ironman Ireland is where he qualified.
So, oh.
Yep. So he's done the distance.
I figured he must have. I wonder how he did there. I didn't even notice.
Well, I would think that he probably would have had to
won it. That was a tough day. I know that was a...
Yeah.
The weather was crazy that day.
Yeah. All right. So let me... We done? Oh, yeah. No, we're not done.
Oh.
We said at the beginning of this that we had to revisit the conversation of either stupid stunts or activities each day that we might do. Now we'll probably won't we swim most every day, don't you think?
We usually kind of do. Yeah. Okay. Swim.
So
yeah,
that's not too crazy, but we could do something like a swim competition or something like that.
Yeah, I need to get some new goggles, speaking
or,
of that.
A race to the shore or something like that, or a race to the boat.
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay,
let's
that. All right, so that's one. I do want to run from the energy lab again, but I've got to make sure my calf is up to it. So I'm going to be, that's tentatively on my list. You up for that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. If we get some bikes, that would be pretty awesome.
I would love to ride the course someday, or at least part of it.
Yeah.
I've done a tiny bit when they had a demo with Ventum bikes, and we went a little bit out on the Queen K, but not anything significant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope we get to do that. And
we could run up to the observatory.
Oh, there you go.
That'd be cool.
Okay.
If your cap would allow.
Whatever, not epic, but whatever kind of highlight activity we do that day, we'll make sure that we get a little bit of coverage in our show on it.
There you go.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, I think that's it, except for the upcoming interviews, which we have a couple coming up. So as a part of our coverage of Kona, we are going to put in interviews with athletes, pro or not, throughout the week. But we're starting off with our very first of the coverage, of the daily coverage, with Kennett Peterson. He's going to be one of the Kona athletes, one of the Kona pros. He's actually one of the ones that, like, he's like an American to watch, right?
He's an American to watch.
He got a first place this year at the Wildlife Loop Triathlon 70.3, second at Ironman Boulder, third at Ironman 70.3 Boulder, And of course, he is one of the first athletes we wanted to talk to about his thoughts on Kona 2019, and that interview is coming up first. And then after Kona, we have Sarah Thomas, who we are going to be interviewing in person, Bill.
I know. I can't wait. That's cool.
It's going to be very cool up there at Launch Cafe. So that's
Let's talk about Sarah real quick. Tell people who she is.
So, if you haven't heard us talk about this before. So Sarah is an open water marathon swimmer from Colorado. She's a cancer survivor and has become the first person to swim across the English Channel four times nonstop. And she lives right up here in the foothills. And we're going to go up and visit with her and hear her story.
That'll be cool.
Very cool. All right. Please support the show and the affiliate brands that support the show by going out to the sponsors page, milehighendurancepodcast.com/sponsors. Follow us on social media this week. Stay tuned, train informed, and enjoy the endurance journey.